This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
There's something about solo travel that can be life-affirming and fun. But it may shock listeners of this show, Solo Travel Talk, that some people aren't super enthusiastic about hitting the road alone. Your solo travel advisor, Astrid Clements, has just the remedy for this enthusiasm gap. If you know a non-traveler, or if you yourself are experiencing blocks to your own voyages, this is the podcast episode for you. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. Prepared to be the devil's advocate, let's tap into Astrid's expertise and undo all the barriers to getting out there as a solo traveler. Here's the premise of this episode, Astrid. I thought it would be cool to give you a selection of reasons that people aren't traveling, and you, being this solo travel expert advisor that you are, you could answer those, quote, reasons, and change hearts and minds in the process. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you come to the right person. I love to change people's minds.
Okay, well, here's your first premise. Travel these days is too much hassle.
Amen, sister. I mean, I will have to tell you. Yes, unfortunately, travel these days can be a hassle. And it's really whether you travel solo or you travel in groups or whatever. And what I have found is most of these hassles really focus around the logistics of the travel, getting from basically point A to point B, whether it's in the airports, the long lines, the security checks that you have to go through, all the people in there, you know, rushing around, or then you have flight delays that you have no control over, or even cancellations, whether it's weather or overbookings or mechanical or whatever. Even the aircraft is much more crowded typically than it used to be. Non-existent, what I call luggage porters. I mean, when I first started traveling, luggage porters were waiting for you at every stop.
Red caps, right?
Oh, yeah. And basically with the logistics too, just getting in taxis and going from point A to point B or having to figure all that out. You know, travel, like I said, whether it's solo or group, is just less luxurious and less stress-free than it was in the past. But you have to just accept this fact. If you love to travel, you have to accept it. In order, in my opinion, to negate the hassle factor when you're traveling solo, you need to employ some disciplined strategies. So that's what I'm going to share with you to help you think about this realistically. Because if you do love to travel, and there's so many wonderful reasons to travel, especially traveling solo, but I mean, you have to be able to deal with some of the things that will stress you out or basically will make you feel like, oh my, this is just too much of a hassle. So here are some of my strategies, or what I call travel tips, to soften the hassle factor when traveling solo. Okay, first, whenever possible, fly premium economy or higher, business class. I mean, if you can afford first class, fine, if you use your frequent flyer points. But when you're flying internationally, I always try to do that because there's so many perks with it that take you out of a lot of the hassle factor with getting to and from a place. You get the fast check-ins. Some of the airports, you don't even go through the security lines. They actually check you in a separate little, well, not actually an office, but a big, beautiful room. Then you go into the private lounge, and then you go, you know, basically right to the plane. They check you in. They do you the security stuff. They put your bags in the plane. I mean, it's beautiful. Thai Air does that. Emirates Air does it in some of its airports. So there are lots of perks with just getting in at the premium economy level. Of course, they have more lenient baggage limitations, and they have that access to the airport lounges. And those airport lounges, really, some of them are not so good, but some of them are really nice. And so, you know, you need to also, first of all, get to the airport a lot earlier than you used to have to. So even domestically, you actually really need to be at the airport around 2 hours early. I mean, I found when I cut it a little too close, it gets me stressed out and things can go downhill from that. And then also internationally, minimum 3 hours now. And sometimes it goes quick. And so you don't want to be hanging around in the public areas of the airport, or you can, but the lounges are really nice. So if you get access to that, that's nice. You know, a lot of them now have spas in them and,
really?
Oh yeah, all kinds of stuff. I mean, it is Air France in JFK, really nice lounge. I mean, they have great food there and they have a beautiful spa there. It's not fully serviced, but they'll give you a free facial and free, it's free actually. Yeah. Yeah. It's a Clarin spa. It's quite nice. Okay, and then domestically, you know, that's your call, because a lot of times they don't have a little upper class section in a jet, in the plane. But if they do, you get a little bit more leg room, seat is bigger, you know, blah, blah, blah. The experience isn't that great, that much better. But you might get a fast check-in and you might not. It just depends really on the airline and the airport. You do want to get the TSA approval, which does give you the fast track line and the global entry. If you travel a lot, you need to go ahead and get those designations, because it does help with the horrible airport scene now with, you know, taking your shoes off. And some of them are much more lenient. Others, oh my gosh. I mean, it takes time and it's a lot of people and it's a hassle, but get you to, even if you do fly domestically and fly just basic fare and don't have TSA, try to get a Platinum American Express or a credit card that will allow you to get into those airport lounges, because those are quite nice. And that just kind of, you know, breaks the frenetic energy in a lot of airports. You can go in there, have a glass of wine or eat a little bit, relax a little bit before your flight, and then go to the aircraft. So that's the first thing. Second thing is pre-book your pickup service for when you arrive at the destination airport. I mean, a lot of people just get in a cab, or, you know, they have some kind of shuttle service with the hotel. The shuttle services are great. If your hotel has a free shuttle service, by all means use that. But if it doesn't, and here you're flying into a foreign city, a city where you don't speak the language you've never been to before, I recommend that you have the hotel arrange for a pickup service, even if they don't have their own vans, use a separate company. Now, I use Blacklane. It's a wonderful company that has international livery service, and they have limos, they have, you know, small town cars, and even a smaller size. Very affordable. All the drivers are so nice. They always give you water and some kind of treat. They meet you exactly when you come out of immigration with their sign. They take your bags, and it really takes that, you know, getting to a new city and getting to the hotel. The first kind of thing that could give you some stress or you make you feel uncomfortable, this way you've got somebody with your name on that sign ready to pick you up and take you to your hotel. It's a big thing. I mean, you know, it seems like, oh, no big deal, but that's quite nice, because it takes you there. And once you get there, you know, oh, good. I've made it all good so far. So I recommend that. And I have had great success with, Blacklane, so give them a try.
You've said before it kind of sets the tone for your start of your trip there.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, you know, when you're leaving and going back home, you can get your hotel to get you a reputable cab if you don't want to pay quite that much. Blacklane is not expensive. And you know, now with Uber and all of the competition within the, you know, the car services, there's not a lot of playroom. So Blacklane is very competitive. So here again, I like them very much. Third thing, do extensive pre-trip research. I mean, the more you can research about the place where you're going, making a list of what the must-do things that you want to do, things that you, you know, if you have time left over, that would might be fun to do. But do all of this. Don't just go somewhere unless you're just in the mood to hop a flight somewhere and see what happens. But if you don't want the hassle of not knowing where something is or not being familiar with that, you know, two museums are here and you know, you want to do this particular evening entertainment is there. I mean, the more you do the research of what you want to do, your must-dos, and then the things that also interest you, and dig deeper and to kind of locate them where they are in the city or the place that you're going to, you know, you get familiar with what's there and what you're going to key in on. That is a big thing that starts to organize your thoughts and what you're going to do. And when you approach things this way, you're not going to get as stressed out. The hassle factor is not going to rear its ugly head. And I even go to the point where, you know, I get on Google Maps and everything, and I kind of just map things out. After that, I create, and this is the fourth suggestion to keep your travels as hassle-free as possible. Make yourself just a flexible pre-trip itinerary and base the things that you want to do in key neighborhoods. One neighborhood you might want to do everything that's in the historic center of a city. So try to do it that way, because if you don't, you spend a lot of time in taxis or a lot of time walking from here to there, and you don't get to do everything you want to do. Do that, and when you get to the hotel, go over this flexible, what I call daily itinerary with the concierge to see what he thinks about it, and just to kind of cross check what you want to do, and you know, are these in good areas? Can I take the streetcar? Is it possible if I walk, or do I need maybe even a car and a driver to do some of these things that are outside of the city? And then that leads me to the fifth thing. You can hire, a lot of people don't realize this, but, you know, being a solo traveler, a lot of times there are things that you want to do that are outside of a city or even an hour away that are very important. I mean, whether they're a UNESCO site or whatever, there's no way that you can actually get there. I mean, you know, you could... Yes, I guess now I get an Uber. But the bottom line is, get your concierge to hire a driver for you that will take you out there. And then if you want a little bit more of an experience, see how much it would cost for a driver and a guide. And I can tell you, in third world countries, it is so reasonably priced, and it's definitely worth it. I just recently got back from Mexico City, and I used a driver 2 days, and one day I actually had a guide at night because I wanted to go to a mariachi show, and I wanted to go to the tequila and mezcal museum and all these kinds of things. And he took me through Mexico City in the evening. We stopped at some of the great monuments, and I took some beautiful night photos. But he explained to me, you know, this is where Pancho Villa, he's buried right in this monument. Wow. And all these kinds of things. And so my point is it was very inexpensive to have this guide and driver the entire evening. And I could get back to my hotel at 12:30, and I could enjoy the mariachi night in the squares and everything. And I would not have done that without having that. But, you know that you can do that. And that will help a lot with the hassle factor. Because when you talk about hassle, it's not just, it's hard to figure out how to do something, but it's also the stress of it. That's where, I mean, the stress factor is the kicker, with the hassle. Yeah. I mean, that's when it's like, I'd rather be home.
That you've gotten to the root cause.
Yeah, really. Okay. Then also, don't overplan. That's another thing. Mm. Don't try to do too many things in a day. That'll make you feel hassled. I'm telling you. Two things in the morning, a good lunch, not rushed if possible. Two things in the afternoon, max, because you're going to be getting tired. I can tell you, and I'm a pro at this. And take a little snack break or coffee break at mid afternoon. And then maybe something in the evening, and maybe not something every evening. You know, it's okay to go to bed early. don't do too much, because I can tell you, when you get overly tired or you're exhausted, that's when everything starts to be a hassle. The things that, I'll never forget when I was in the Far East, I don't particularly like the smell of some of the incense that are burned in front of the temples. And when I'd get tired, that particular smell would just make me want it would turn my stomach kind of. But it was really because I was tired and exhausted, and your senses just kind of, so pace yourself. I know in Mexico City, the altitude of the city is like 7,000 something feet, and that altitude really does affect you. You don't realize it at first. Plus, Mexico City, you do a lot of walking. It is a humongous city. It's hot. The cobblestones, I mean, I have never been anywhere in the world where the cobblestones were that hard and kind of hard to walk on. And one person said, yeah, it's like walking on bowling balls. So what I'm trying to say, you're walking on these cobblestone streets. It really does kind of hurt your knees and your
head. Well, it's uneven too.
Yeah. And it's crowded, et cetera. By day three, I took the afternoon off and got a 2-hour massage. Ooh. Because I didn't realize how the altitude, right, all that walking and the heat, et cetera, affected me. I was not pacing myself properly. So do that, because if you don't, things will start being a hassle. The whole trip will feel like a hassle. And at seven, which is kind of the same thought pattern, allow for downtime. I mean, really, you don't have to go out, go to some kind of show or have an activity every night. Just have a few glasses of wine or a couple of cocktails in your hotel's lounge, and just, unwind. A lot of times I like to write in my journal, or I post on social media, or, I'll communicate with family, or I'll just, sometimes I meet people, etc. And I get back to the room at around 9:30, and I go to bed and wake up refreshed the next day. So, allow yourself for some downtime. You don't have to be doing something all the time. And I have to tell myself that all the time, because I love to blow and go. I want to see everything. Okay, eight. Stay longer, if possible, in one place, rather than 2 days here, 2 days there. They talk a lot about now slow travel or doing deep diving into a place is much more enjoyable, and it's definitely less stressful, because, it just stands to reason. It takes you typically 2, maybe 3 days to get used to your hotel, to get used to the room, to get used to the bed. And if you're up and leaving the next day and you have another, you never get settled in anywhere where you can just really kind of relax and enjoy the next day and what you've done that day, etc. So try not to do those kinds of solo trips, because that kind of travel, you know, packing, unpacking, those airports, all the flight hassles, the security lines, the logistics. I mean, that increases the hassle factor greatly. I think personally, 1 week in one place is ideal. It's just enough time to see most everything you want, give you that downtime, you know, really kind of absorb the real atmosphere and the culture in a place, rather than, you know, trying to do too many places. If you have to do that, then you have to get prepared. You got to get in shape for it, and you have to kind of know how to approach it. Okay, and then the 9, stay in a highly rated, well-located hotel. And I can't stress that enough when you're a solo traveler. I mean, a lot of the younger travelers love to just, you know, backpack it and hostels and everything. Older solo travelers, I just want to share, you know, the nicer hotel is worth the expense. You don't have to stay in the most expensive 5-star hotel. But a good hotel is wonderful, because that's part of your trip. That's part of making a solo vacation memorable and very much hassle-free, because these good hotels have great service, they have security systems in place, and really, there's nothing nicer to me. You come home.
Yeah.
But it is your home.
It's your home base. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. And they're saying, oh, hi, Miss Clements. How you doing? What'd you do today? And everything. And that's what happens when you stay in, definitely the 5-star hotels, because they're getting more and more competitive in terms of all their systems to how to make people feel comfortable. And there's also a growing trend that they know when, you know, people are coming solo, they treat the solo traveler kind of more like a VIP. Not totally, but they know that they are not, you know, with their spouse, significant other, or other groups. So, and they know that it's important to make the solo traveler feel welcome, because there's a theory. If you don't treat the solo traveler well, they're not always going to travel solo. And if they come back, whether it's a restaurant or whatever, or recommendation, you're not going to get a good one. And they're not coming back when they bring the group with them. So a good hotel is very important, well located, so you can walk as much as, you know, possible. They're typically in safe areas. That's very, very important in my opinion, to help keep the hassle factor down when you're traveling, and especially traveling solo. Then the last thing is, here again with the planning, start your trip planning well in advance. The longer you're going to stay away from home, the more research you'll do. But, you know, minimum, if you're going internationally, 3 months ahead. But, you know, a lot of times I'll even start maybe even 6 months, especially if it's somewhere Asia or somewhere that's, the culture is very different than my American culture. I want to know everything about everywhere that I'm going, so I don't miss something important, and then I get the feel of where I'm going, and the trip will be, it'll be special, and it'll be worth it. So, you know, with that, you got to have enough time to do everything you need to do before you leave. that will keep you from being stressed out when you've gone home. And lots of things can happen at home if you don't think about them. Well, and before we get to the home part, but basically you got to book your flight, your hotel bookings, and pickup service. You got to know all that's taken care of. You got to make sure your passport is up to date. And now they're big on it's got to be in 4 6 months before and 6 months after. Certain countries stretch it out to a year. So you have to, you know, if you start booking and planning and you've got things in place and your passport is going to expire in a month from now, you might have some serious problems. So you have to work through and know all these things. So that's important. If you're going to somewhere where you'll need immunizations and there's different health things that you have to put in place prior to when you go, that's important. Make sure you've got your travel insurance in place, because a lot of places your health insurance policy will not kick in. They will only take something like a travel health policy that, you know, pays in a certain way, as well as, you know, your travel policies. Most all of them have trip delay, et cetera, in it. So you need to get that. I always suggest developing a trip budget so you have a finite amount of money that you want to spend on this trip. You kind of figure out how you're going to spend it, how much you're going to spend on, you know, blow money, how much you want to spend on eating. And so when you're there, you can kind of adjust your spending depending on how much it's really costing you. But to develop that budget before and know you have the money earmarked for it, or your credit cards are in good position to do what you need to do, that's important. If you don't think about it, then you might be halfway in the trip say, oh my God, I've spent all this money and I didn't realize it, because you really didn't think about it. So I think that that's important. Of course, I talked about the pre-trip research, develop the flexible itinerary. You got to take care of your pets. You got to make sure your bills are going to be paid if you're traveling at the end of the month, the beginning of the month. Mail and newspaper cancellations until you get back. I mean, there are a lot of little things. Security. What are you going to do about your house? Are you comfortable with leaving your house with no one in it? If there's no one in it, do you want a house that you have to arrange all these things? And if you don't start planning early enough, then as closer you get to the, oh my God, I got to do this, got to, and then I mean, you are getting like you're stressed out before you leave. Next thing is pack light. I can't stress that enough. And you kind of need to start thinking about this at least 10 days before you leave. If I'm going on an international trip, I'll start packing like 2.5 weeks before. I'll take out my little itinerary, where I want to go, see what the weather is, et cetera. Then I figure out what I think I want to wear, look at it, see if it's got spots or, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I start paring down. Week before, I'll think, do I really need that pare down? Try to get as light as you can, but also have the clothes that are appropriate for where you're going and the weather. Enroll and step. If you've listened to any of my podcasts, about every other one I talk about step. This is a smart traveler enrollment program that the U.S. State Department has for American citizens who are traveling. This allows you to put all your personal information in their data bank, your trip itinerary, where you'll be staying, your relatives in, you know, information in case of emergency. But this lets you know that you will be in, say, Botswana or wherever on these dates, and they know. And if you have a problem, if, you know, you have an accident, or if unfortunately you're a victim of somebody stole your cell phone, or you have any kind of problem, you twist your ankle and you have to go to the hospital, you know, you don't know whether you can rely on the U.S. State Department to help you work through your problems. And the first thing you need to do is enroll in that STEP program. And one other thing, if there's anything that you need to know, whether there's potential political unrest or if there's something that could endanger you, you'll get text messages and emails about what's happening and suggested things to do to remain safe. That takes some unknown hassle factor out of your trip because, you know, nine point nine times you won't ever need it. But the time that, you know, you need it and you have it, you're going to be so happy. So that's why I keep talking about it. Because a lot of people don't know about it.
Yeah.
And prepare your loved ones for the time away from home. And you might have to give them a little bit more extra special loving care before you leave. But, you know, let them know where your passwords are and where your life insurance policy is. I mean, I don't want to get kind of, you know, too serious, but you need to kind of always take care of business before you leave, just in the event that something does happen. So I always say that. And then last, basically, try to travel in the off season or the shoulder season. Let me tell you, that is so much, travel during those seasons, even though the weather might be a little inclement, is much better. Because unfortunately, some of the wonderful cities and places that you travel to now are overloaded with tourists. Venice is almost a no-go because there's so many cruise ships that come in there all the time. There's so many people that are visiting in this small space that it's really affected travel and the quality of that city. So if you go in the off season or the shoulder season, it's definitely cheaper and you don't have as much of that crowd thing. So that keeps the hassle factor down. If you apply these strategies, it's not going to eliminate all of the hassle, but it will definitely reduce this objection to traveling. So, Catherine, next objection.
There is plenty to discover in my own community.
Huh. Okay. Well, my answer to that is yes. You should always be exploring your own community. I mean, you should really be familiar, in my opinion, it's history, culture, you know, what's going on entertainment-wise, unique sites, you know, festivals. I mean, if you want to really have a full life, I mean, you need to be involved and know your own community. But while you're experiencing your own community through the years, I think you need to travel somewhere new also. Because to me, it makes you appreciate your own community and its culture so much more because it really does. It broadens your horizons. And when you explore different foods, music, art, architecture, I think the more you do that, it fine tunes and develops your senses. And it just opens you up to new and deeper perceptions of your own home. And I'll share an example. I used to never, ever notice sunsets. I mean, never. I mean, and I'm a very hawkeye individual. You know, I like to watch. I like to look. I learn a lot by looking. But I never even noticed sunsets. I wouldn't appreciate them now. I wouldn't appreciate them when they happen. Now that I've traveled so much, and especially since I take a lot of travel photos, I have gotten into sunsets and the golden hour and really looking at nature in a different, a more open way that I can really see it and I notice it and I feel it. The birds, I hear birds singing much more than I used to before. Yeah. But the point is from traveling in many different places and seeing many different sunsets in different areas of the world, now I see the sunsets in Baton Rouge. I notice them more. And that's one of the things that travel does for you. It's also, I mean, really and truly, it is fun, interesting, and exciting. I mean, even bad trips, and there are very few of them, but they can be kind of fun and interesting and exciting in a weird way. Because travel just, it does something for you that's all good, I think. And then also you meet, new friends. I mean, you know, if you don't get outside of your own community ever, you're not going to meet different people from different places in the world, which you would have no idea that you would be friends with. But to me, it's kind of a lot of times like a spiritual thing. You'll just meet people at different times on your travels that, you kind of know you were supposed to meet. They either say something that was, you needed to hear right at that time, or there was some kind of connection there that, was not your normal, that you wouldn't even have, in your own community. So I think that too is one of the reasons to love your home, but also roam. So, you know, travel basically, I think, helps you get out of your rut, out of your comfort zone. And then when you come home, you're renewed and you're energized.
Can we get a t-shirt that says love your home, but also roam?
Well, if you want to do it.
Look for those later, maybe on the Astrid website. Okay, next objection. Solo travel is the runner-up option when someone can't find a travel partner. I think you're going to have something to say about this one.
Okay, well, I have to answer this question as a qualified yes and no. Yes, there are many times that potential travel companions really can't or don't want to travel where you want to go. And you know, or you have a whole bunch of things that if you go somewhere that you want to do, see, eat, etc., and that's not their bailiwick, or they don't have the time or the money to be able to go. Different likes, dislikes, interests, you know, that you have. So it comes down to you have a choice to either stay or go solo. I mean, that's basically the choice that you have. So most people that I have found who do choose to go solo, they love it. And they choose to do it because first and foremost, they're free to do whatever they want to do when they want to do it. They don't have anybody who they have to worry about, or they have to please, or they have to compromise. They can get up in the morning when they want to. They can stay and shop in the markets as long as they want to. They can spend the whole day in one museum if they want to. I mean, my point is the people who go solo and know the value of it, they really choose to do that. And sometimes it happens that, you know, they'd like to go with somebody else, but they've gone solo and they've got the taste of it and they start knowing, well, I mean, you know, if I just plan and kind of organize what I'm doing, it's nothing to it, really. I mean, there are a few things that can kind of make it maybe not as fun or whatever, but you learn coping skills with it. But also people who choose to go solo, a lot of times they want just basic me time. They need to detach. They have a lot of responsibilities. Whether they're married or not, and they just need to go somewhere by themselves, okay? And that is more and more prevalent than it's been, you know, than it used to be. Then also, there are people who really want to delve deep into what interests them. Say there's somebody who loves gardening, has a beautiful garden at home. So they want to travel the world and see the gardens of the world, the Italian gardens, the French gardens, the English gardens. They want to go to flower shows, etc. Well, if your friend is not into flowers and she's into high-end shopping, you know, I mean, there's going to be a disconnect there. Or if the group doesn't, if they're not into hybrids and all this, you know, so that's another reason why people do choose to go solo. It's not because they don't have anybody to go with them or they can't find a group to go in, because there are always tours around, okay? But the statistics really show that there is a trend, and a very fast-growing trend, of more and more people are choosing to travel solo. And I mentioned this a little bit at the beginning of the show. There are hotels now that are really have solo-friendly procedures, etc. They make the solo traveler feel welcomed in the restaurants. You know, I know a lot of times, well, in China, after the second day I was in this Raffles Hotel in Beijing, the general manager of the hotel came up and introduced himself, asked if he could join me for a little bit during my breakfast, wanted to make sure that, you know, I was comfortable. And they know now that the hotel industry, hospitality industry, is getting very in tune to the types of travelers that are coming to their hotels, because it's so competitive. Solo-friendly restaurants. I mean, around the world, you're seeing more and more restaurants that have the communal tables or the sitting areas around the chefs and the cooks that you can see, or the bistro-like tables with just two chairs and a small table and the couches or the banquettes along the wall like bistros have. But they know that people are going to come in and eat solo many times. So it's not like, oh God, ugly duckling, nobody wants to go with her. She's, you know, an outcast, blah, blah, blah. It's not like that. And then too, even the cruise lines in the tour industry, Abercrombie and Kent and some of the real good, they're having tours and specialties geared to solo travelers. So if you don't want to go totally solo, you can join one of those, but they're geared to you not having anybody to travel with. So what I'm saying is the stigma of solo travel is abating. And that really kind of started with the business traveler. When women started traveling, they had to. And women now really are more independent and empowered. And because of like technology, the media, whether it's mainstream media or everything on social media, in the increased ease of travel and just all of the multiculturalism that we're now being exposed to, the world is really becoming more and more open and accepting to the solo travelers. I mean, I see it so much in the last 8 to 10 years, how it's just like exploding. I kind of end this statement by saying they're divorcees, they're widowers, they're single women, professional women, and even women who are married, like myself, whose husband does not want to travel anymore. He has done it all. He thinks he's seen it all, and he just doesn't enjoy it. These people have the money. They want to go. And so many times they really are choosing to go solo. So bottom line, the world's changed.
This next one's a good one. You're increasing your risk factor when you travel alone.
Well, my broad answer or response to this statement is yes, somewhat, and no, in really the general sense. I mean, you can be unsafe in your own community. You know, when people are always saying, oh, aren't you scared to death to go by yourself? I can't believe you're doing that. And I tell them, let me tell you something. Where I'm going is a lot safer than where we live. And I live in a very nice neighborhood. But my point is the incident of crime and violence and something that happens to you that's unsafe can happen right here at your own home. So I'll say staying safe while traveling solo really, I think, is the number one concern for the solo traveler. But if you use basic common sense, you diligently, and I mean, you know, like discipline, you employ safety practices, and then last, always trust your gut. This will get you through, really, this will get you through 99.9% of anything. And if something happens, like I said, it could happen in your own hometown. And where I live, it probably happened quicker. So here are my basic solo traveler safety tips. And I'll go fast through this list because some of them really are just common sense.
Plus, we do have a couple of episodes that you went really more in detail about safety. So you can also, listeners, you can refer back to some. And maybe I'll put in the show notes some of the links to those specific episodes.
Yeah, why don't you do that? Because this really is the number one concern solo people who are thinking about going solo travel. They say, oh, my God.
Isn't it dangerous?
Yeah. I mean, I'm forever, my husband, when I come back, he said, oh, my God, Astrid, your friends, they're so worried about you. They are accosting me. How can you let her go? Like, you know, you mean she went to China for 5 weeks by herself? You let her go? Well,
that's funny.
So here are my solo traveler safety tips. Don't walk the street alone at night. And I mean, you know, some places are okay around your hotel, especially if you stay in a real good area. But be back around 9 and 10. Anything after that, you are opening yourself up. So that's just a basic general practice. 2, don't get inebriated. In Mexico City, where I just went to, if you are caught drunk, Or you're walking down the street with an open container, and here in Louisiana, I mean, you know, we're
more open with these things.
But you'll be fined, and you could be jailed. So, just being drunk leaves you incredibly vulnerable. And you know, if you want to have a couple of drinks and really kind of really get loose, do it in your own hotel. I mean, you know, that's another no-brainer to me. But I say that because a lot of times when people go, they get away from home and they're having so much fun and they just kind of forget, oh gosh, that's when things can go downhill. So, I mean, you know, think like this. Oh no, I can't have more than 2 drinks. If that's my limit, then I'm not going to do that. I'm going to get back to my hotel. If I want 1 or 2 more, then you can go ahead and do it that. But don't get drunk by yourself, even during the day. You know, that makes you very vulnerable. 3, and I talked about this, prearrange transportation from point A to point B. If you need it during the day and always at night. I like to do things in the evening, like go to show performances or ballets or whatever. And I do not want to get in a cab at 11 o'clock at night in a foreign city. I just don't. So I'll get with my concierge. I'll see what kind of transport is the best. Sometimes, you know, he'll get a cab for me or an Uber at the hotel. But when the performance is over, he will have a specific driver waiting for me. Oh, yes. And I never get in a cab at night in a foreign city. That is my biggest no-no. Cabs are the things that have given me the most anxiety when I travel. So I'm real careful about the cab thing. Oh, and then another thing. If you're out during the day and you want a cab or even kind of early evening, find a restaurant, or if you just finished, get the restaurant to call a cab, or find a hotel that's close and get the hotel bellman of that hotel, even if it's not your own hotel, to help you get a cab. I did that several times in Mexico City because I didn't want to hail my own cab off the street. I just, you know, there's something about all that.
Yeah, you don't like it.
I don't like it. So I'm real suspicious. And then there are some people too, and you know, there's some safety people who recommend, if you really get kind of like uneasy, well, take a picture of the cabbie and take a picture of the inside of the cab and take a picture of the cab's license plate or number. I mean, you know, don't be too like scared. Get your phone out and start documenting in photos. But I don't want to go overboard with the cab thing. But I'm just saying you can have some strategies in place that will make you feel much safer in doing this. So get your logistics, your from point A to point B down and how you're going to handle those things. Also, carry a hotel card in your purse or backpack at all times, the hotel address and the phone number on it, etc. In case of an emergency or your cab driver can't remember exactly what you said or who got you the cab, or, you know, you have it there written down, because especially when you don't speak the language, you know, it can be an issue.
That's one of my favorite tips of yours, is to get the business card. They all have them. I never knew like why they have them sitting out there. And this is exactly why.
Oh yeah. No, it's a lifesaver, because it could be a front street, three front streets or whatever.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, you can get lost in a city when you don't know what exactly, and you can't communicate that well. So walk as much as possible. That's a big thing. Try not to be beholden to anybody who is driving or whatever. If you can walk and stay in safe areas, and avoid the areas, what I always say, ask the concierge to show you the areas on the map that you have to avoid.
Okay.
Then if you use mass transit and you're comfortable in doing so, try not to do it during the rush hours. Like in Mexico City, oh my gosh, it is like cramming, and in China, I mean, they push in, cramming in, and that's when the pickpockets are there. And that's when, I mean, that's when things can go. So if you're comfortable and do it, try not to do it during the rush hours. Also, 7, try to learn how to use the tech devices, the apps, you know, to help you plan your day and your logistics, and help you prevent from getting lost, or what I call feeling lost.
Mm.
Because I am forever almost somewhere. Almost. I mean, I got 3 more blocks, but after, you know, 30 minutes of walking, I'm thinking, am I going right? I mean, I'm forever doing that. And I'm just almost there. But if you have those apps and everything, you can use them, and it takes out the stress completely, because that gets me stressed. If I feel like I'm lost.
Yeah.
Oh, so I work very hard not to feel that way. And I'm kind of lucky because I have a good sense of direction. But those apps are great, and that takes me into the next thing that is tech-oriented. There are a lot of safety devices now, whether it's the help phone numbers on your smartphone. I mean, you can do it 3 times, and it calls 911. There are all kinds of little things now on these smartphones that can help you instantaneously alert your loved ones or the authorities that there's an issue going here right at this spot with you and your phone. There are also gadgets like Roar, these things that you press and they make a tremendous loud sound like a fire engine to scare anybody off. And the minute you press it, it's connected to your loved ones or sometimes law enforcement to say that there is an issue here.
Yeah,
help. Also, you can buy things like room alarms now where you can put it on your door, and if they open the door, it goes, rah!
Yeah.
You know, no, I mean, I actually have a little 10-second video. It is like a child did the video. But I've had thousands of people look at it. But it's this little device that I use. that if I'm ever scared, and I'm not a scaredy cat at all,
no.
But when I went to China the first time, I didn't know what to expect. I mean, I was so overprepared because I was, you know. So I had this little device that you hang on your door, and you had these two little pin-like things that you stick between the mullion on the door and the door. So if anybody opens that door, it makes the loudest noise. I mean, it sounds not quite as loud as a fire engine, but it will wake up the two or three rooms around you. It will. So, I mean, you can get one of those. You can even get one of the simple, cheap door stopper.
Yeah.
You know, and stick that in you, or a whistle. People used to, women used to carry whistles before this. And then also they have now these apps where they're translatable apps and this kind of thing. You should be able to use those too. So my point is you can use technology to help you be safe now. And you should. I mean, you probably use it at home, and so you should be familiar with it and use it abroad. Nine. That same thing again, enroll in STEP, Smart Traveler Enrollment Program. I won't go over it. It just beat you over the head.
We got to get them to sponsor the show.
Yeah, the U.S. State Department. Okay. And then number 10, stay connected with your family or friends. You know, even if you're not married or whatever, you know, give somebody a text every day or two, or an email. You might want to call. Do some social media posting if you do that, but be careful. Don't be saying I'm solo, happy and free, and blah, 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 you know, because that could be a problem. 11, take the day tours. I mean, you know, you might be solo, but take some of these great tours that they have, walking tours, food tours, all kinds of special interest tours. You'll be surprised. 25% of the people on those tours are going to be solo. Yeah, they are. They used to not ever, but now you see them, and the number is growing. And then last, if you really are afraid, you can take self-defense courses. And some people even recommend that. If you travel solo, you should know some basic self-defense courses. So I don't think that that's a bad idea. I don't think it's wild. My last rebuttal it's more dangerous to travel solo is really the more you travel solo and you use these safety strategies, the more confident and relaxed you'll feel. And when you're confident, you feel and look less like a target. And that all, it's kind of like a full circle. You know, it plays and you really don't feel, you don't feel scared. I mean, every now and then there are things that get your antennas up. But I can tell you, the more you do it, that'll, you know, you'll be ready to roll in a new place.
Okay. I can't wait to hear your answer to this next one. Solo traveling has turned into a method of showing off. People are going places just for the selfies.
Wow. That was my first reaction. I mean, this is something really, Catherine, I've never thought about. But, you know, I guess it really could be true for some solo travelers.
I thought I wanted to give you some good ones to really sort of gnaw on here.
I mean, come on. You know, but to me, this is really how the viewer of the photo is interpreting the solo selfies in the final analysis, you know, which could be correct or could be misleading. I mean, I think basically show-offs are show-offs, whether they're traveling or they're not traveling. So, I mean, you know which friends you have that are show-offs. And you know what friends you are that are secretive. You know what I'm saying? And the selfie phenomena really has caught on internationally. You know, I mean, it's a phenomenon. And it's for any moment that someone, you know, wants to snap and then publicize on social media some form. So, you know, to think about this, I mean, I really think that most solo travelers do like myself, like to share their travel experiences because they think they're interesting and they think other people might learn something for it. And they want to share that. And by, doing that, they're bringing their viewers with them on their travels. You know, and even if the photo is about them or where they are, I kind of think the selfies in an indirect way are bringing the world closer together with shared experiences. Hmm. I really do. You know, I mean, like I said, I mean, if somebody's a show off, thinking that, I mean, it doesn't matter. Okay. But I have to say myself, I mean, I travel the world solo for enjoyment, for enrichment, and really for excitement. I mean, I love adventure. I've been like this since I was a 5-year-old kid. My mother was always worried I was swinging on the vines and doing all these high wire things. She's going, oh my God. But I love sharing these experiences with my followers. And and I do hope to encourage other people to travel solo or those who are contemplating it, you know, and they're kind of on the fence that, you know, you can do it and it's okay just to go solo. And really, that's the reason why I developed my website, Astrid Solo Travel Advisor, why I have my social media sites, you know, I do the videos, and now even the podcast, Woo-hoo! Solo Travel Talk, is to inform people about this topic. So, you know, this is not about me and how fortunate I am to be able to travel solo, and I'm putting, you know, myself, you know, in selfies on some of my social media posts. I do that a lot of times to ground the place, or it is something special and I'm really having a great time, or I'm trying to emote something that I think I need to be in the photo. I'm not so great looking, so I'm always, you know, trying to, you know, minimize the photos because it might turn somebody off.
I don't think that's a problem.
Well, but so, you know, I just kind of, you know, finish answering this question. Some people, or even some of my listeners, you know, kind of might think I am showing off, but really this is the farthest from my intention and the farthest thing from my mind. I do believe that most solo travelers do have this attitude deep down because solo travelers are free-spirited people who love to travel. And sharing their experiences via selfies or whatever other travel pics are really part of the solo journey. It's part of the whole thing. And so, you know, I'd love, Catherine, for my listeners to comment on this objection.
Yeah.
And I'd be curious to see what they say because it is kind of like a, you know, the whole social media phenomenon. When Facebook first came on, I thought that was the most ridiculous, trite thing. I said, who wants to know this then? But I mean, you know, it took off. And then there's Twitter. And then there's Instagram. And all of these things, Snapchat, blah, blah, blah. And some of it is very time consuming. And it is narcissistic. It's just basically focused on, hey, look at me, you know, for whatever. But there's other side of it too. I wouldn't know what's going on with other people. I'd be missing out on a lot of things. I couldn't share some of the things that I want to share, etc. So, you know, if anybody wants to put some comments about this objection, I'd like to hear it because, wow, that would shock me.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good. This is a good. Listeners, we'd love to hear from you what you think about that one. But I think that was a great answer, Astrid, because two things. It's eye of the beholder. You know, you can't care what anybody's thinking about what you're doing. And the inspiration, that you can be an inspiration to people when you're out showing that you're doing it. You're out there being a solo traveler. Good job. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, last one. Solo travel is a waste of time.
Hold the bus. Hold the bus on this one. I mean, really, that's a phrase that we use down south. Just hold the bus. My comment or rebuttal to this gross misrepresentation is no, excuse me, hell no. Because it's my belief, first of all types of travel are worthwhile, whether they're solo or whether they're with others. And so to take this blasphemous statement on head on, I find myself sometimes when I'm sitting outside in the evening by myself, just kind of thinking, I'll bring back all those memories. I could have never gotten enriched like that unless I would have gone, and especially to travel solo, because I could really absorb it, because it was just me, you know. And so when you're by yourself, your senses do get stronger. It's just something, because you're not as distracted by either having to talk to your husband or your friends or whatever, and so you're. Like I said, I think your senses are more in tune. If these reasons why solo travel is not a waste of time haven't convinced you to take the plunge and travel solo, then going solo might not be a good fit for you. And I mean, that's true. Some people who come, they say, do you really do this? And so, I don't know if I could. I said, look, it is not for everybody. I love it. I think everybody can learn the skills. All these benefits that I've talked about, I feel very strongly about. But it just might not be everybody's cup of tea. And that's okay. You know, with that said, I really do challenge all my resistors or all those resistors out there to solo travel to rethink their misconceptions or their fears about this type of travel. And join the growing trend of confident, independent, modern women who are enjoying the thrill of solo travel.
We imagine that everybody who's listening to this, any objection, any resistance that they have has been completely broken down at this point. And now all you're thinking is, yes, I'm ready to take that plunge. So guess what we have for you is to make things just a tiny bit easier. Astrid has an amazing packing list. It's available for you free, complimentary. All you have to do is go to her website, astridtravel.com. Right there on the homepage is a place that you can put in your email address and you can download the packing list right away. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, any of the finer places that podcasts can be found. We love people who have subscribed to the show. I'm imagining, Astrid, some of our real regulars, they're going to be the people in their lives who aren't really solo travelers yet, they're just going to be popping on this podcast and sort of like osmotically letting their friends learn about it.
Well, and comment below. You know, I mean, this one is a podcast. I know I had a lot to say and I'm a big talker, but comment, because I like to hear people if I'm wrong or they think I'm wrong or maybe I haven't communicated just exactly or what is there something that I've missed or whatever that I can think about or that I can share I've had experience with or not. So do comment, because that helps me develop the show. And you know, I might do a whole show just for whoever made the comment.
Yeah, we love that interaction. We're trying to give useful information for a solo traveler. Okay, so now you have to subscribe, comment, pack, and go solo. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. We love that you join us here on Solo Travel Talk.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or solo travel advisors, visit our website, astridtravel.com.